Hey there, friends. Welcome back to another episode of the Bible and Life podcast. My name is John Whitaker. I'm the host and creator of the Bible and Life. And as always, I am glad to be with you in this format, this venue where we can think through some things together about how to follow Jesus. And I typically refer to that, as I say here often, as blue jeans theology, where I'm just trying to think through with you what the Bible teaches and to do so in everyday language, talking about stuff that relates to everyday life with the aim of helping us follow Jesus in the midst of everyday life. So that's what we're all about on the Bible and Life. And over the last handful of weeks, we've just been kind of reflecting out loud on some things I'm thinking about and writing about related to faith and politics, related to following Jesus and being a Christian in the midst of a national environment, wherever you're at, that oftentimes does not support the Christian faith, that has its own challenges to living out the Christian faith. And in my particular context, we're approaching another election year in the United States of America, and I'm not looking forward to it. I feel mostly sad about it and the state of where we're at. And that has prompted just some reflection and some thinking and some writing that I've been doing with a friend of mine. Lord willing, will be a book here out shortly on some of that. We have talked over the last handful of weeks just about various aspects of who we are as the church, as God's people, and how that ought to shape maybe how we vote or how we relate to people or how we have conversations with people and interact with people who might look at things differently, and just being honest about some of that. And what I want to talk about on this episode is just something that really is a practical reality. In our current world, everyone has, you know, to some degree or another, a voice and an audience, and it's called social media, and we're free to express our thoughts and opinions all over the place for everyone to see and feel and think what we're hearing on social media. And one of the things I've observed over life in general, and particularly right now at this present moment with social media, is this, that it's far easier to criticize them. That is, to criticize those people out there, right? Those other people who think like that, those people who vote like that, those people, right? Like, it's far easier to criticize them than to do the hard work necessary to offer something better. And you see this particularly in with regard to the topic of our time here together on faith and politics. You see this all over the place where you people, Christians, post mocking memes. They have reels where they're making fun of the current administration or the administration they hope doesn't become the candidate they hope doesn't become the president, or right? And there's all sorts of spiteful rhetoric and derogatory terms. And that's the fact is, that's just easy. That's easy. It's easy to post mocking memes and to ridicule on reels and to use spiteful and derogatory rhetoric and run people down. And as I've noted on earlier episodes in this little series, that there was a time in the United States of America where there was a pretty significant overlap between the values and virtues of the kingdom of God and some of the values and virtues of our nation. But as the beliefs that undergirded those values and virtues have been rejected increasingly in our nation, those values and virtues have been kind of begun to wane and go by the wayside as well. And so now that overlap between the values and virtues of the kingdom of God and the United States of America, well, that's shrinking. And some of the values and virtues of the United States of America are now vastly different than the values and virtues of the kingdom of God. That's where we're at historically at this present moment. And that, I think, leads to this fear and this anger and this distrust, which leads us to criticize and to mock and to, right, and to ridicule and, right, to get angry and speak with angry rhetoric. It leads to some of that. And as I said, that's easy. But the early Christians model for us a far more powerful path. The early Christians where the church first entered into the world, it entered into a pagan environment, the Roman Empire. And so those first Christians and those early Christians were surrounded by the abyss of Roman pagan culture. And in the midst of that, what they did was they offered people a better way of life. They had no political power, none, particularly very early on, right? They had no means of social media to post, to make their feelings, right? They couldn't go and picket in front of the emperor's palace. They had the possibility of protest, but they didn't see that as a great option for them, actually. When you read the New Testament and you read early church history, that wasn't really how they chose to approach it. Instead, what they did was they transformed the ancient Roman world by presenting a different way of life, a better way of life, and calling people into that. They offered, if you will, an alternative culture, something radically different than what was all around them, and they invited people to join them in that. And you actually see a beautiful description of this whole approach in a writing from an early church leader named Tertullian. He wrote a work called The Apology, which means the defense. And he's offering a defense of Christians and the church and the Christian way of life. And he spent the early chapters of his apology defending the Christians against the accusations from the pagan world around them. They were being accused of all sorts of supposed evils. And Tertullian defends them against that in the early chapters. Then, in chapter 39, what he does is Tertullian turns to say, and here's some positive good that's actually found in the church. And he says things like, they don't practice violence. In fact, he actually kind of almost a little tongue-in-cheek says, in fact, the only violence they ever practice is they wrestle with God in prayer for the welfare of society, for the welfare of rulers and leaders and all people in general. So that's the only violence they practice, quote-unquote, is they wrestle with God in prayer. He says that Christian leaders obtain their position not on the basis of wealth or just power, but on the basis of tried and true character. Their character is trustworthy and tried and true. He says the church collects offerings, which are purely voluntarily, he points out, and they don't spend them on things for themselves to enjoy. They spend them on caring for the poor among them, to provide for the needs of children, to look after the elderly and those who are imprisoned or exiled for their faith, that they collect offerings and they use them to care for people. In fact, Tertullian claims that what brands the Christians is their noble love for one another. So much so, they're marked out so much by their noble love for one another, Tertullian says, that their pagan neighbors, he says, exclaim, look at how they love one another. Love, which Tertullian says stands in stark contrast to the hostility and the animosity and the hatred that you see in culture at large. In other words, what Tertullian is saying there in chapter 39 of his apology is that the early Christians might not be able to stop the slander against them from society at large. They might not be able to keep some of the imperial leaders from turning against them, but they could, and Tertullian says they did, impress those who actually knew them, those who lived next door to them, those who saw them in town, those who they cared for who were needy, right? That the early Christians could and did impress those who actually knew them with their love and their whole manner of life. And that is far greater than criticizing culture for all its shortcomings and sins. That's how the early church, that's the pattern they give us. That's how they transformed the pagan Roman world. And that's the, I think, the example we need to learn to follow. Again, protesting, picketing, posting, criticizing, angry rhetoric, right? Running people down, mocking. That's easy. Doing what Tertullian says the early Christians did, that takes far more work, far more character, and is far more powerful. So, in view of our calling, as we talked about in an earlier episode in this series, in view of our calling to be an outpost of heaven in the midst of our community, right? We're citizens of heaven living on earth, wherever we're at, in the United States of America, in Canada, in the UK, in Australia, in South Africa, Zimbabwe, Thailand, wherever it's at. In view of our calling to be an outpost of heaven in our community, what we ought to do is work hard at forming and offering an alternative culture, a better culture, one that's attractive and draws people to Christ. Or as the Apostle Paul said in Titus chapter 2, verse 10, that our manner of life ought to adorn the doctrine of God, Titus 2, 10. Spoken specifically in that context there in Titus chapter 2, to servants and slaves, who's like, the way you do your work, the way you conduct yourself as a servant or a slave of your master, do it in such a way that it adorns the doctrine of God. And that's what we ought to do. We ought to find a way to present such a different way of being human and doing life that even if it doesn't stop all the slander and all the ridicule against Christians or even some of the policies against them, for the people that actually knows us, it's like, wow, look at how they love one another. Look at their manner of life. I think that's what Jesus meant when he says in the Sermon on the Mount that his followers are salt and light. Right? You can find that Matthew chapter 5, verse 13 through 16. And Jesus just states that as a matter of fact. He doesn't say they should be salt or they should be light. What he says is they are. Like, my followers, Jesus says, is they are salt. They are light. Statement of fact. So how do we live that out? What does it mean to be salt and light? Here's the interesting thing. In my early years as a follower of Jesus, being salt and light was always, like every sermon, every teaching I ever heard on being salt and light was always associated with personal evangelism. Like, you need to be salt and you need to be light by going and sharing the gospel. Now, that's good. Sharing the gospel is important. We want people to come to know Jesus, right? We want people to realize that he's King and Lord of all, risen from the dead, and he's offering a forgiveness of sins and a new life to everybody. So personal evangelism is good. But that's not what Jesus is talking about, it seems, in Matthew chapter 5. When he says, you are salt, you are light, he's not talking about personal evangelism. In fact, he says in the context, we live out our identity as salt and light by shining forth, Jesus says, our good works in such a way that people glorify our Father in heaven. Matthew 5:16, the very final culmination of that whole passage about being salt and light. So what does it mean to be salt and light? Well, for Jesus, what he's talking about is the way we live out our life. And the early Christians took him to heart on that. That's what you're hearing in Tertullian's writing. The way we live our life shows a different way of being human, an attractive way, a better way of being human. And what good works does Jesus have in mind in the context there in the Sermon on the Mount of Matthew 5? If you just keep reading, Jesus gives some examples. How do you be salt and light? Well, you shine your good works. What good works, Jesus? Well, he lists off some things like eliminating lust, like operating without anger and contempt, like practicing marital fidelity, like acting with complete integrity, so much so that you can just say yes and no, and people know your word is good, loving your enemies and doing good for those who want to harm you, and all other kinds of things that Jesus instructs both in the Sermon on the Mount and in the rest of his teachings about what his people do now that they've entered the kingdom of heaven. That's how we live out our calling, our identity as salt and light, according to Jesus. So just imagine with me, if you will, what it would be like if we actually began to live out the Sermon on the Mount. Imagine a community marked with patience and peace rather than with anger and contempt, where anger is no longer seen as necessary for getting your own way or protecting your own interest, where name-calling and labeling is rejected in favor of reconciliation and harmony. Imagine a people who not only rejects obvious forms of adultery, but also the out-of-control sexual desire that causes adultery, and so many other sexual evils. Imagine a people where there's no sexual harassment, no sexual abuse, or any other harmful sexual activity, but instead there's sexual purity and sexual faithfulness and fidelity. Imagine marriages which routinely last a lifetime because the people within them have the character marked by faithfulness and self-giving love that make a lifetime of marriage possible. Imagine a people who are known to be completely trustworthy because they act with genuine integrity, right? Their word is their bond. Imagine humans who are actively kind to all people, even to people who hurt them or who oppose them. They freely share their possessions. They do good to all people. They even actively do good to people who would be considered their enemies. Imagine a people of faith, but whose piety goes beyond merely keeping up religious appearances, a people who actually seek to be genuinely good from the inside out, people who regularly and sincerely treat other people the way they want to be treated. Imagine that. It almost sounds too good to be true, doesn't it? And that's the kingdom vision that Jesus has in the Sermon on the Mount. And so if we're going to be an outpost of heaven on earth, right, if we're going to be that holy nation and royal priesthood that we talked about in an earlier episode, this is the kind of people we must become. And Jesus acknowledges in the Sermon on the Mount that we can lose our saltiness. We can hide our light. How would we do that? Well, once again, when I was a young believer, I was always taught that meant by not sharing the gospel. And again, that's not unimportant. Sharing the gospel is important. It's just in the context of the Sermon on the Mount, being salt and light is about shining your good works. And once we see what Jesus is actually talking about, it becomes clear that we lose our saltiness and we hide our light by failing to live out the good life that Jesus calls us into and intends to form among us. We're not the kind of people that we just imagined. And so, in this current world, where it's politically tense and politically divided, where there's deep differences of opinion about how we should move forward, even among Christians, on what's the best way to deal with this particular issue, or what's the best way to deal with this particular problem, right? Like, there's differences of opinions among them, even Christians. So in a deeply politically divided world, what do? Well, what I would suggest we do is the same thing the early Christians did, the same things Tertullian said that they did in his day and age. Let us be marked by this beautifully good way of life that Jesus calls us into. Rather than standing on the sidelines, arguing and fighting and bickering and trying to make America a wonderful, utopian Christian nation or whatever nation you live in, right? Instead of trying to do all that, not that, again, that's not unimportant. That's not our primary focus. What if we put our energies more into, as the people of God, saying there's a better way of being human, even when we disagree, even when we've been traditional enemies, even when life is hard, even when we're not sure how to proceed, we love one another. We serve one another. We're actively kind to one another. We give to one another. And we live out the kinds of things we see in the Sermon on the Mount. Living that way means we're actually good for the world. We're providing a concrete model of human flourishing. And we're offering an alternative society that can attract people to God's truth. And that's how the church once transformed the world. Now, they didn't live it perfectly, of course, and Jesus has instructions for us when we fail to live that way. But even though they didn't live it perfectly, they did believe living this way was possible. They sought to embody it genuinely and substantially. And doing so is much more powerful than expecting a fallen world to live up to Christian values and to live out Christian virtues. And so let me just ask you a few questions for you to kind of examine yourself and think about as we just reflect on what's better than criticizing culture. Well, it's forming an alternative culture. So what if our churches became greenhouses for human flourishing? What if our churches actually became like places where human beings could learn how to flourish as human beings, could learn how to live Jesus' vision. Like if we believe Jesus knows what he's talking about, that this is the right way, the best way, the beautifully good way to be human, what if our churches actually became greenhouses for living that sort of way? What if, instead of standing on the sidelines of human goodness, criticizing and mocking, we actually entered into the fray of becoming genuinely good human beings who embody the character of Christ by grace and by the Spirit? What if we became so conformed to the image of Christ that we demonstrated love and did good for the righteous and the unrighteous alike, as Jesus teaches us in Matthew chapter 5, verses 43 through 48? What if, like the Christians of Tertullian's day, we were known by our genuine and great love for one another and for all people? What if that's the way we set out to transform society? It worked in the past, and I tend to think it could work again today. So that's my encouragement for us as we look at our world. We look at the political season we're in. Yes, we vote. Yes, we engage. Yes, if we're in positions of power, we bring our Christian wisdom into that place. But what's even more important than all of that is that we, as the people of God, we begin to embody the kind of life that Jesus taught us, that Jesus calls us into, that Jesus himself modeled for us. All right, thanks for tuning into this episode of the Bible and Life podcast. Bible and Life is a listener-supported, crowd-funded Bible teaching ministry that is made possible by the generous support of dozens of people just like you. So thanks a ton for your support and for your generosity in making this ministry possible. If you've been blessed or impacted in any way by this ministry, would you just prayerfully consider if you're able to join a team of supporters so that this ministry can continue to grow and expand, reach more people, impact more people, so that all of us together could continue to learn how to live out the way of Jesus right in the context where we find ourselves today and every single day. Thanks a ton for your support.